Good morning, everyone. Today's daf in Ksuvus is Kuf Hey. We're going to finish up the 12th parak of the Masechta. God willing, this morning we'll begin the 13th and final parak of the Masechta. And then we can say we're in the final stretch of the Masechta. Thanks to Lubin Foundation for sponsorship of the daf. We're on the last mission on Kuf Dalet Amid Aleph, last mission of the 12th parak. So is there any statute of limitation in terms of the collection of a ksuva? Okay, so one of the final discussions that we're going to be having regarding a ksuva is how long does that claim exist? In other words, so if she's either divorced or widowed, so obviously she's entitled to her ksuva, and it's a documented loan, so one would think that there is no statute of limitation. In other words, if you one would just think about it for a moment outside of the Mishnah, so you can only imagine that it's any... It's a note of indebtedness, and as long as you're holding the note, so therefore it's open for collection. So that would have been a very productive thought. But on the other hand, the Mishnah is going to point out that this is not that clear cut. So let's learn the Mishnah together. Start with the Mishnah. As long as she's in their father's house, she can collect the ksuva ad infinitum. There is no statute of limitation. But if she's in her husband's house, so then she can only collect the ksuva, but only up till 25 years. After 25 years, she no longer can collect the ksuva. Statute of limitation has now officially come up. And why? Why should that be that? In other words, there really are two questions. Number one, what's the number 25? What's 25 years? And number two is that why does it make a difference whether she's in her parents, living in her parents' house or living in her estate's house? What difference does it make? So the Gemara gives an argument. The Mishnah gives an argument. As we'll see in just a moment, this is the opinion of Rabbi Meir. Because in those 25 years, if she's living with the estate and she's living with the Yorshim, so probably what happened was is that over the course of time, she used the money. We're not talking about mizonos. Mizonos is a separate line item that she's entitled to, but we're talking about some other money of the estate that she used. What did she use it for? Whatever. Somebody knocks on the door and can I have tzedakah? No problem. So she takes from the estate and she gives, right? She gives the gifts to somebody. In other words, at one point in time, she uses money from the estate. This is all the opinion of Rameir Sha'amar, Mishum Rabbi Shimon Ben Gamliel, who got this from Rabbi Shimon Ben Gamliel. Okay, and then now we can also understand the distinction. The distinction is that if she's living in her parents' house, so then obviously she has no access to the estate. So if she has no access to the estate, so she hasn't used any of the money, and therefore there's no statute of limitation. That's all Lishita Rabbi Meir. Chachamim Marmim and Chachamim say, no, it's just the reverse. So the Chachamim say, no, the 25 years is right, but just flip it. When she's living with her, with the Yorshim, with the heirs of the estate, she's living with the estate, so therefore there is no statute of limitation. She can continue demanding her ksuva even after 25 years. However, if she goes back to her parents' house after 25 years, then she no longer can collect the ksuva for reasons we are going to articulate in just a moment. Now let's say she dies. So she dies, so she now, the ksuva gets handed over to the Yorshim. In other words, the ksuva is a collectible. It's an account receivable. And so therefore, what can a Yorshim make the demand? So the Yorshim can make the demand, but the same duration as she. So Yorsha maskirin ksuva sadas v'chamishanim. So they make mention of the ksuva within 25 years. If they don't make mention of the ksuva within 25 years, so once again, then the note becomes, the obligation becomes absolved.
Does it make a difference where she died?
No. Well, I mean, that last line of the Mishnah, it could, in other words, it could be interpreted as going back at Rav Meir, but most probably is going on the sheet of the Chachamim. So then, yes, and then in that case, it wouldn't make a difference. Okay. So much to discuss within the Mishnah. Let's start off with the Gemara. So Amalei Abayla Rav Yosef Anisha Bisrael Adesim V'Chamishanim Umarta Baz Baitos Adesim V'Chamishanim. So the Gemara says, let's go over what we learned. Rav Meir's opinion. Rav Meir says, why 25 years of living at the estate is she no longer entitled to ksuva? So Rav Meir says, because over the course of 25 years she probably spent the money. So the Gemara says, really? But what if there's a little bit of money versus what if there's a lot of money? Meaning Marta Baitus, which is the Gemara's prototypical wealthy woman. So she, when she became a widow, she had a tremendous estate. So it takes 25 years for her to go through the money? Should take a longer. So Amrlei Lefum Gam L'Shechna. So the Gemara gives a powerful answer, encapsulating three words. Based on the strength of the camel, that's how you're going to load the camel. Meaning, people spend based on what they have. People have a little bit of money, they spend little. People have a lot of money, they spend big. So, in other words, that's correct. 25 years is basically the amount of time it takes you to spend through that money. In other words, and the people who don't have money won't spend a lot. People who do have money, so they spend big. So the Gemara asks a pretty practical question, a reasonable question. According to Rav Meir, do we prorate? Meaning, okay, so what's the svar behind Rav Meir? It takes 25 years to go through the ksuva. Okay, so let's say she was married for 10 years. So, I'm looking for that number that's right in the middle so I could say 50%, but 25 is an odd number. But 12 and a half years, okay, good. So 12 and a half years. Okay, so now, does 50% of her ksuva now get deducted based on Rav Meir's svara? Teiku, the Gemara says, I don't know. It's a good question. It's interesting. It's a good question. Seems to be a pretty obvious answer. Meaning if the whole svar is that she's going to spend her ksuva, so then ostensibly you would say, yeah, you prorate it. So unclear why the Gemara does not resolve this question. What would be the counter-argument? Why is it that the svar behind Rav Meir is that she eats into her ksuva, and yet we don't prorate? Hard to understand why that would be, but Gemara leaves that question unresolved. And all that becomes an academic point because we don't pass like Rav Meir, we pass like the Chachamim. It's not an academic point, it's Torah. But Lamaisa, though, we go like the Chachamim. The Chachamim Omrim Kozman, Amalei Abad L'Rav Yosef Asai Konem, So the Gemara says, now, we're going to investigate the opinion of the Chachamim. Now, Chachamim also worked with the 25-year statute of limitation, but the Chachamim are basing it on something else. If she's living in the estate's house, there is no statute of limitation. If she went back to her parents' house, then there is a 25-year statute of limitation. So first of all, in the Mishnah, we didn't articulate why, which we're about to do in just a moment. And also, the Gemara is bothered by another question. Well, first of all, let me give away the answer. The answer is mechila. The answer is that after 25 years, if she has not breathed a word about her ksuva, it's because after 25 years, it's okay. I don't need it. How do you know I don't need it? Because it's been 25 years since I've been a widow and I haven't asked for it. So she was mochel. This is an interesting discussion, by the way. Mechila, where you don't articulate the mechila. A presumed mechila. Right, I don't know. I'd have to catalog, and I, off the top of my head, I don't know another area in the Gemara where the Gemara has this idea of presumed mechila, which she didn't articulate. But now we can understand, or I'm going to explain the difference between her being in her parents' house versus her being in her own house, in the Yerushim's house. In her parents' house, so she's now away from the estate. It's now been 25 years. Presumed mechila. In the estate's house, it's not a presumed mechila. Why not? Because they're taking care of her. In other words, she's living with them, they're taking care of her. And what is she supposed to do? She's supposed to remind them about the ksuva? That's totally inappropriate. So in other words, living within the estate, so that's not a presumed mechila because she didn't mention it because it's embarrassing for her to mention the ksuva. It's simply not appropriate for her to mention the ksuva. So her absence of saying anything is not a presumed mechila. Masha Enkin, if she goes back to her parents' house in 25 years of coming on, so and she hasn't said anything, so mechila. Gemara is bothered by the following question. 25 years, really? Meaning the eve of the 25th year. The eve of the end of the 25th year. Has she asked for a ksuva then? She's going to get it. After that day is over, she's not going to get it? Meaning, what exactly happened between the last day of the 25th year and the first day of the 26th year? So the Gemara says, Ba'i porta achilta? Really, it's at that moment she was mochel? But the Gemara says, yeah, that's correct. Meaning, you can ask this question anytime there's a shear. Anytime there's a shear, you could say, I don't understand. Before this, it was no good. After this, it's good. Or vice versa. Mm-hmm. But the Gemara says, but that's how shiurim work. Call me the Chachamim Keni. The Gemara says, that's just simply how shiurim work. As a simple example, you have to tov on the mikvah. The mikvah has to 40 saw. Let's say it's 40 saw minus a drop of water. And it's no good? Yeah, that's right. That's no good. Meaning, that's how shiurim work. So, good. So the same thing over here. Amar Rav Yud, Amar Rav Heid, Rabbi Yishmael, Rav Yosef, Ne Rebbe, Shamar Mishum Aviv, Lo Shano La Shein Shtar Ksuva, Yotze Mitachas Yadeha, Ava Shtar Ksuva, Yotze Mitachas Yadeha, Gove Ksuva, Sola Ola. Okay, now let's talk about a variable. Okay, so in our Mishnah, let's assume we're going to go like the Chachamim, and that the 25-year statute of limitation is only when she moved back with her parents, but let's now sharpen this issue a little bit better. Let's say after 25 years, she comes and demands her Ksuva, and she's still holding the Ksuva document. Is there going to be statute of limitation over there? So the Gemara starts off by quoting Amoraim, Rav Yehuda Amarav, who quotes a number of Tanaim who say, no, there is no statute of limitation if she's actually holding the Ksuva document. And then the Gemara quotes a different opinion, Rabbi Lazar, who says, no, even holding the Ksuva document, if 25 years have come and gone, and she lived in her parents' house, and she hasn't said anything about her Ksuva, she has forgiven the Ksuva, even if she's still retaining the Ksuva document. Okay, so we have a machlokas. So Rav Sheshes quotes a Brisa. Brisa says that a Balchov is able to collect even without mention. Now, Hechidami, what are we talking about? Idolon nakashtara b'maygave. So the Gemara says, now if the Balchov is not holding a document, so what strength does he have to come to collect? Eladonakashtara. The Gemara says, obviously, we're talking about a regular creditor who's holding a document. So the Gemara says that now, as it relates to the Balchov, he is mochel. Sorry, let me say that correctly. He is not mochel. Meaning, and the Bryce is obviously there to serve as a contrast. Contrast that to whom? To the widow. The widow is mochel, even if she's holding a document. So most of love, the Gemara says no. That's not what we mean. We're talking about a case where no document is being held. Over here, you know what the Bryce is describing? Where the borrower just simply admits to the loan. Bar admits to the loan. So the bar admits to the loan. There's simply no statute of limitation as it relates to a creditor and borrower. And the contrasting point is that when it comes to the widow, there is a statute of limitation. The Gemara quotes a Brisa, and the Brisa says that that a divorcee is like a creditor. So Hechidami. So the Gemara says, now again, give me a little context. So if she's not holding a ksuva, so exactly how is she coming to collect? Elalav Nikita ksuva. Obviously, she's holding a ksuva. And again, what's the contrasting point of the Braisa? So it must be Ugrushi Idala Barchulehu. The divorcee is not ready to forgive the ksuva. Ha'amana chilta. But the widow, however, is ready to forgive. Meaning, and again, just intuitively, you understand the distinction, right? When it comes to Grusha, the marriage ended with animosity. So good. So she wants a ksuva, and there's no idea by the Grusha that I'm ready to forgive it after 25 years. No, she's not ready to forgive. The whole termination of the marriage was under the context of animosity. However, when it comes to the Almana, so after 25 years, it was a good marriage. It ended, unfortunately, with his death, and after 25 years, so maybe we can argue she forgave. So the Gemara says, but again, isn't the contrasting point over here is that the Grusha doesn't forgive when she's holding the document, and the Almana does forgive even if she's holding the document? So the Gemara says, Hachana Mekeshachai Moda. And again, the Gemara says, no. Maybe over here we're talking about where there's no document to ksuva being held, but rather the husband agrees that he owes him money. He admits that he owes him money. Am Rav Nachman Yitzchak Tani Rav Yehuda Bar Kaza Ben Masisa Debe Bar Kaza. The Gemara taught the following braisa: Tava ksuvasa harei kibitchila. You can reset. You can hit a reset button on the 25 years. Once you demand her ksuva, now you hit a reset button, and now you're back to the beginning, and now the 25-year clock starts now. As long as she's holding the ksuva document, so there is no statute of limitation, and she can come and collect at any point in time. This brisa clearly states that the holding of the ksuva document is obviously a clear indication that she's not being mochel. So the only time that we're having this discussion of 25 years, she doesn't utter a word, it is an implicit mechila, is only going to be when she's not holding the ksuva document.
Does she have to do the declaration in front
of the witness? I don't know. What lodges a formal protest? It's a fair question. I don't know the parameters.
Once she gets a ksuva, she doesn't get fed anymore, right?
That's correct.
So maybe she refers to
well,
the defendant.
Well, we're about
25 years.
Right, we're about to discuss in the Gemara, meaning right now the way we're presenting is that she's waiving her ksuva. After 25 years, she's really waiving more than her ksuva. She's waiving all the support.
Right.
So right. So
do that. She won't get ksuva. That's a correct conclusion.
Stay tuned as we're about to discuss that. Yeah, that's a more than reasonable question. I looked around. I don't know what the number. In other words, the number 25 clearly was the number. Okay. Meaning, because you saw in the Mishnah, Rameir and the Chachamim argue. It's two totally different arguments, but they were both operating with a 25-year number.
Right.
So good. So the number itself obviously was a critical number. How to use that number correctly, that obviously became the issue. Where the number came from, which is your question, I don't know. Shalchle Rav Nachman Bar Chisol, Rav Nachman Bar Yaakov, Yalamdena Rabbeinu, Kishashar Ksuva Yotze Mitachas Yada, Machlokis, or Kishain Shar Ksuva Yotze Mitachas Yada. So question number one, the question that we've been dealing with, what did she still retain the Ksuva? Is there still a debate, or is there no debate if she's still holding the Ksuva? And, V'alacha Kedivrei Mi, and also another simple question, who do we follow like in the Mishnah? Kedivrei Mi. So, Shalach Le B'Shein Shtar Ksuva Yosei Mitachas Yada, Machlokas. Aval Shtar Ksuva Yosei Mitachas Yada, Gove Ksuvasa, La'olam. So, not point number one, she's holding the Ksuva, there is simply no statute of limitation, she can always come and collect. And finally, V'alacha Kedivrei Chachamim, and the halacha falls like the opinion of the Chachamim. Good. Adkan, that takes us to the conclusion of the Gemara, conclusion of the Sugya. We follow like the Chachamim. Only when she goes back to her parents' house and doesn't utter a word about her ksuva for 25 years, she forgives, but only when she's not holding her ksuva. She holds her ksuva, so she is she's still entitled to collect her ksuva. And with that, we now start with a story. Not yet. I'm sorry. A little more halacha. Ki also Rav Dima, Rav Shem, Rav Pazi, Rav Yishu, Rav Levi, Mishum, Bar Kapar, Lo Shana, Olam, Manam, Asayim. Aval Tosefes Yeshla. So the Gemara now is going to try to argue that although there was a waiver of her ksuva after 25 years, but that's only with ikar ksuva, that's only with the base amount of 100 or 200. But if there's any tosefes within the ksuva, that was not forgiven. That is according to Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi. Rabbi Abahuam, Rabbi Yochanan, filo tosefes ein la. And Rabbi Yochanan says, no, not even, when there's a waiving of the ksuva, it includes both the base and the tosefes. The Amar Rabbi Aibu, Amar Rabbi Yana, Tanai ksuva ki ksuva dami, a discussion that we had earlier in the Masechta. And that is, any of the stipulations of the ksuva is linked with the ksuva. Once she forgives the ksuva, all the addendums that come together with the ksuva also going to be forgiven as well. So we're going to have another debate amongst the Amorim on this very same issue, where the Gemara quotes in the name of Rav Huna that she only forgives the base amount, but not the tosefes. So Rabbi Abba turns to Rav Huna and says, where did you get that from? Did Rav say that? So Amar Lei, Ishtikin Kamart, O Ashkain Kamart. So what are you going to do with my answer? Are you going to silence me, or are you going to give me a drink? Right? Right, it's almost like, you know, sometimes we joke, you know, let's make a kiddush, right? So whatever answer I give you, is it because you want to tell me that I'm wrong, or you want to give me a big yeshikach? So I'm really ishtakin kamin. No, I'm ready to quiet you, meaning you're wrong, meaning that once she waives her base amount of the ksuva, so together with that she's also waiving everything that comes in conjunction with the ksuva, including the tosefes as well. Okay. All right, that concludes the Gemara. So again, so when she does forgive her ksuva, which is only after 25 years and only while living in her parents' house and only while she's not holding the ksuva document, I got that all in one sentence. So then she also forgives all the supplemental as well. Chamte de Rabbi Chia Aricha inseis achu havai. Okay, the mother-in-law of Rabbi Chia, the tall Rabbi Chia. Okay, was married to his brother. His mother-in-law was married to his brother. Okay, some of these relationships are complicated. Here's what we need to know. We need to know that his brother was alive, married to a woman. Okay, had a tricky relationship with this man, but my brother was married to this woman. The brother died, and there was no other heir other than the surviving brother. We're not talking about Yibum. It's not a case of Yibum. It's just that The surviving brother was the only heir, and he was the one who inherited the estate of his brother. But also, with the inheritance of the estate of the brother, he also has to handle the account payables of the brother as well, notably the ksuva. The aman beveis avi ahavai. Now, as far as the widow went back home. She lived with her parents' house. And vizana esrim v'chamei shnin bevei nasha. And what happened was is that he did what he was dutifully bound to do, which was he supported her for 25 years. L'sof amar le havle mizone. So after 25 years now have come and gone, so now she comes over to her brother-in-law, and she says, mizonos. Like me, like in other words, it's been 25 years, right? You know what to do, right? I need support. So amar la leiflach mizone. So he says, no more mizonos. She says, interesting. Havli ksuva. Okay, well, no more mizonos. Okay, so pay the ksuva. So amar la lo mizone islach velo ksuva islach. So he says, no, I'm not paying you mizonos, and I'm not paying you ksuva as well. Okay, tavasi ladina. So they go to court. Okay, so the case in hand is 25 years have come and gone. His argument now is that she waived her ksuva, and together with the waiving of ksuva comes also the waiving of all the other support as well. And her counter-argument is, no, I didn't waive it. Okay. So, also, I'm sorry. So, Tavasa Ladina. Kamed Rava Bar Shila. So, presiding over this case was Rava Bar Shila. Amrle, Emily Izi Gufa Du Uvda Hechava. So, he says, okay, let me hear details. So, Amrle, Zanisa Simchamish Shanim Bevenasha Bechaye Damar Be Bachtafai Amatila. And he says, look, for 25 years, so what did I do? On my own shoulders, I took the food and I brought it over to her parents' house. And I supported for 25 years. Okay, so, in other words, his testimony is, I did what I was supposed to do, 25 years I fed her. She didn't mention anything about a ksuva. She was not living in my house, she was living in her parents' house. And she didn't say anything about the ksuva, so she must have waived it. So Amar Lay, so he says to him as follows. Now this is the judge talking. So Amar Lay, time of Mayama Rabban Kosmanchi Beves Baala Govik Suvasa La Olam. Let's go back to the beginning of our whole discussion this morning. You know, 25 years, if she's living with the estate, so it's she doesn't waive her ksuva. And you know why? The reason why is Damina Mishim Kisufahu. The reason why, I'm sorry, Kisufahu Dalotava, is because she's embarrassed. She's now currently being supported by the estate. She's living under the roof of the estate. And what is she supposed to do? She's supposed to remind them every day about her ksuva? Even once a year, it's embarrassing. They're taking care of her. So, hachanami mishum kisufu delotava. But now that I know that you personally delivered the food to her, so that means that you saw her every day. Right. And as you're bringing the food over to her, what did you expect her to say? Hey, oh, thank you so much for the food, and please remember, there's a ksuva owed to me as well. That's ridiculous. She's not going to ask for that. So zil havla. So he ruled against him in favor of her, and he says, you got to pay her the ksuva. This story is going to be choppy, meaning that at points in the story, you'll see that they really looked out for the widow, and then later in the story, it's going to go the other direction. So, admittedly, this is like a real life story where it's not a smooth one sided affair. It's like life. It's a two sided affair. So lo ashkach. So he didn't like the ruling. He thought that was a bad ruling. So kasav la adrachta anichse. So things got really, really dramatic, and so now they went to Beis Din. Beis Din ruled in her favor. He's refusing to pay. So now next step for Beis Din, adrachta. Adrachta is a letter of seizure. Letter of seizure that's written on behalf of the awarding party. In this case, that would be the widow. And that with that letter of seizure, she would now, with the force of Beis Din, be allowed to come in to collect properties on her behalf. Good. Also, come into Rava. She goes to Rav and she complains to Rav. She lodges a complaint. Now, I'm not really sure this is an appeal. It's an informal complaint. I'm not precisely sure what right does she has to go to Rav
Huh? Rav Chia was complaining, not her.
Yeah,
why would she complain?
I'm sorry. No, I'm sorry. I'm Rav Chia. Thank you. That's now that I'm thinking about what I said, that's an excellent point. Okay, good. Well done. Okay, so he's complaining. So again, so this is but my question still stands. Is this an official appeal? Is this an informal complaint? Either way. Amalei Shapir Danach. So Rava says, I think he judged it great. I think he's right. So Amr Lehi Hachilez Allah Hadalei Peredemin Ha'uyuma Ada Idna. So now that Rava is supporting the ruling, so now she makes a secondary point, and that's as follows. Not only am I entitled to all the property, and not only have you not paid, and even since we wrote the letter of seizure, you still haven't paid, but now as they go to Rava, and by the way, I'm thinking this through. Maybe they went to Rava because he's just not honoring the Adrachta. And maybe they went to Rava because, you know, Rava was going to put more pressure on him to pay. Maybe that's it. Again, it's just a suggestion. Either way, so now her point goes like this. You know, he not only needed to give me over the property and for the ksuva, but furthermore, you know, since the adrachta has been written, so that property belonged to me. So you know what that also means? All the fruit on that property also belonged to me. And he ate them. So not only do I get the property, but I should be getting the back pay of the fruit from that property as well, since the adrachta was written. So Amalah Akhila Adrachtech. So now he says, okay, no problem at all. Let me just see the Adrachta for just a moment. And here things get now technical and legal. Now on the Adrachta, as he's reading it, the Adrachta was not written correctly. The correct Adrachta should be written as follows. Vishtamudna denechasim elu demisna einan. The Adrachta should be written that the property of the dead, the deceased, so they're going to be, they are owed to this woman. Okay. And the Adrachta didn't say that. Rather, what the Adrachta said is, all properties, including the brother-in-law's property, is going to be a security against the obligation. But that's not true. In other words, which properties are there to secure ksuva? Only her late husband's property, the ones that were inherited by the brother. Those are the only properties that are mortgaged against ksuva, and not the brother's property. The Adrachta didn't specify that, and so on a technicality now, the Adrachta is not good. So I'm... Right, I knew that question was going to come up. Meaning, should there be a liability on the part of the writer of the adrachta, in this case, the judge? I don't know the answer. I suspect that there's a certain liability, but right now the Gemara is going to attack another issue. So adrachta lav sha. I'm sorry. So amr la adrachta lav shapik siva. So the adrachta wasn't written correctly. So amr la tezel adrachta. So she says, okay, look, obviously, I mean, we'll rewrite a new adrachta, but in the meantime, however, look, at least give me the fruit from the time of the achraza, meaning that the property was now being auctioned. Remember, we discussed this in the past, that she's not actually collecting the property itself. The property is going to be sold, and that sold property is going to be given, and the money is going to go to her. And we also learned in the past that we have an achraza. We do an auction to make sure that we get fair market value of the property. So, at least from the point of the auction to the time of the sale, at least that produce should go to me. So, Amar la, hani mile echad lo ksiv taus abadrachta, avahecha, yiksiv taus abadrachta leslan ba. So Rava says, look, I'm really sorry. The adrachta was just not written correctly. And therefore, it's unfortunate, but you're not going to be getting any of the back pay produce. So Amar la, now this was a wise widow. She knew halacha. She says to Rava, you Rava, aren't you the same Rava who say that if there's something missing in a loan document, that is, the omission is not a mistake? So for example, basic example, generally speaking, in a loan document, what do you write in a loan document? That your properties of the borrower are there to secure the loan. Right? A lien, a simple lien on a property is written into every document. Let's say that point's omitted in a loan document. Is that considered a omission that was intentional? Or no, it was just, it's implicit in every loan document, and its omission is not a mistake. That's subject to a debate. Rava happens to be the opinion of Christ himself for who. That was just a mistake on the part of the person who wrote the loan document, but every loan document, according to Rava, has a lien against the property, even if that lien wasn't explicitly stated in that loan document. So she turns to Rava and says, okay, the adrachta wasn't written perfectly. But you're okay with that. You're in general okay with it. So Amr la Rava b'ha leka l'meimah tov sofer hu. So Rava says, no, look, there's a distinction. There's a halachic debate between Rav and the widow. So Rav says to the widow, no, you're right, but not in this case. Because look, when Rav Barshila, the original judge, when he wrote the Adrachta, he actually thought that all properties, the property of your late husband and the property of your brother-in-law, all those properties are going to be there to secure your ksuva. And on that he was wrong. Velohi. And so therefore, this is not an omission of writing a lien in a loan document. That was an omission, but that was just a simple mistake. Here, the actual intent of Rabbi Barshila was to write that all the properties are there to secure. And on that, he is fundamentally flawed in his thinking. Zimin da azla mashapkaluhu udabala mechasfei. Because what's going to happen is that, knowing that all properties are going to be secured against her ksuva obligation, so she'll look at one property per se, happens to be her brother-in-law's property, she's going to improve that property, thinking that that property is going to go to her, and the other property she's going to neglect, and v'amar le'shkol didach, v'havli didi, and then what's going to happen is that finally when they're going to satisfy her ksuva, they're going to use one of their dead brother's property, they're going to swap out, making a very legitimate argument, which is, it's not my property, it's your late husband's property, and therefore people are going to speak poorly about Beis Din, that they were not advocating on behalf of the widow, and so therefore he was fundamentally flawed in the way that he wrote the Adrachta, and therefore the Adrachta is just simply not a valid Adrachta, and so therefore in summation, she's going to get her ksuva, and her ksuva was not waived, and it's because the brother-in-law fed her personally every day, and so therefore she by right was too embarrassed to remind him about the ksuva. All that's true. The only thing that's up for discussion is she going to get the back payros? Had the adrachta been written correctly, she would have, but the adrachta was not written correctly, so therefore she's not going to get it. And okay, so like I said in the beginning, it's like not a, you know, it's not a smooth story, but you know but many halachic considerations.
But she's still going to get the value of the ksuba.
I'll all the questions that I can't answer, I'll take one at a time. Okay.
She's still going to get the value of the ksuba.
Agreed. Right, that's what I said. In summation, that's what I started. She'll get the ksuva. That's not the discussion. It's just the back pay of the payros. Yes.
But he paid the 25 years and it's not being subtracted from the.
No, because those are two. Those are two separate line items. The mizonos is one obligation. The ksuva is a totally different is a separate obligation. But once the ksuva is forgiven, so then the mizonos is forgiven as well. But in this case, the ruling was that the ksuva wasn't forgiven, meaning she's right. The widow was right. The ksuva shouldn't have been forgiven. And so therefore that means that the property belonged to her, which means that she should have gotten the peros, and only because of a failure to write the adrachta correctly, she didn't get the peros.
The what say about Rava is a comment for omission is not.
So in general we do follow that achrayas tar soferu. It's a big debate. Rashi quotes. Right, Shnayim Ochsim. Oh, okay, fine. Beginning of Bab Metzia.
And when they auctioned the land, could the widow actually participate in the auction?
Of course, yeah. That we discussed that earlier. Yeah. She was a participant.
I didn't have Chiyah was allowed to go to the front of the robot.
I agree. That part also confuses me. It's an appeal, or maybe it was an informal complaint. You know, maybe a kid. I understand. You're right. Agreed. Maybe it was that kiddish. I don't know. Your point's well taken.
The brother-in-law
stopped
the mizonos by just giving the ketubah.
Yes. Yeah. Yes. There was two minhagim. One minhag is that the brothers have an option of terminating her mizonos by giving her ksuva. Or the other one is that no, only when she gets remarried, but until that point in time, her mizonos is continuous. Hadron al-Chanose, that is the end of the 12th parak. And now we are beginning the 13th and final parak of the Masechta. And it starts like this. Shnei Dayan Gzeres Hayu B'Yerushalayim. There were two judges who judged over decrees in Yerushalayim. Now, I know the wording is strange. As we go through the Gemara, everything will be explicated a little bit better. And these two, and as you probably would guess, in Yerushalayim, there are more than two judges. So, again, just stay with me as we go through the Mishnah. And the names of these two are Admon v'Chanan ben Avi Shalom. The two judges were Admon and Chanan. Chanan ben Avi Shalom. Interesting. Please take a look at the first Tosfos in the Perek, which is on the bottom of Kuf Dal Amud Beis, where Tosfos makes a big deal about Chanan being the son of Avi Shalom and not of Shalom. Tosfos goes on to discuss how no one should name the children of Shalom. Of Shalom was a Rasha, and in general, you shouldn't name your children after Rishayim. So there's a discussion. That discussion is in Tosfos. So these two judges, Admon and Chanan. So Chanan Amar Shnei Dvarim, Admon Amar Shiva. Chanan said two things and Admon said seven things. Now, once again, in terms of the numbers, I'm sure they said more than two and seven. The point that the Mishnah is about to articulate is that there were two controversial things that Chanan said and seven controversial things that Admon said, and really the entirety of this parak is to go over the two and seven. Why is the 13th parak of Ksuvah going over this when a lot of these issues are not going to be Ksuvah related? Well, because the first one is Ksuvah related, and you know this is structurally how the Mishnayos work. In other words, we have a clump of halachas, these two and seven controversial halachas of Admon and Chanan, and so therefore it does allow us to springboard into other issues as well. So, but they go like this: Chanan Amar Shnei Dvarim, Admon Amar Shiva. Okay, let's go. Number one: Misha Nach Lemedina Seyam Vishto Tavas Mizonos. So the husband goes off on a business trip and leaves his wife and doesn't leave her any support. So we're not talking about a widow. We're just talking about right happily married woman. Although husband goes away for a long time and doesn't provide her mizonos, so I guess you can contest how happy everyone is. But anyway, and she's making a very legitimate claim. He's financially bound to support her. He's not providing her the support. Okay. So what's her recourse? So she goes to court, and the court says, okay, the court goes down into the property and starts seizing assets of the property. What's the issue? It's an issue that we discussed earlier, but that's because we were quoting our Mishnah. Now we get to see the Mishnah inside. Chanan Omer, Tishava B'Sof, Lo Tishava B'Tchila. So she should make a Shvuah, but only at the end. What exactly does that mean at the end? So if you take a look at Rashi in the top of Kofi Amad Aleph, Rashi writes, Kishi Yishmu Bo Shemez V'Tav L'Gavus Ksuvah. So the end means that the husband died at a later point in time, and she's coming to collect suva, tisham v'shalo akva b'yada mishaba l'klum. So at that point in time, she's going to make a shvuah, and the shvuah is going to be that anything that she collected was strictly from mizonos. She didn't skim any more off of that. She didn't hoard anything else for herself. That would be part of a satisfaction of a ksuva. But she only makes a shvuah at the end, not at the beginning. And nechlo galav b'nei kohanim gedolim, on this point of Chanan, is contested, highly contested by the b'nei kohanim gedolim. Interesting, we don't find that very often in the Mishnayos, that they represent a shita, but here they do. And the amr tishava b'tchil of itself, and they say, no, she has to make a shvuah both at the beginning, at the end. Meaning when she starts collecting mizonos, she has to make a shvuah, and then at the end, she has to make an additional shvuah as well, that she didn't skim any off the top. I'm Rabbi Dosa ben Horkanus Kedivrehem, and Rabbi Dosa ben Horkanus says like them, meaning like the Kohanim Gedolim. I'm Rav Yochanan ben Zakkai Yafei Amar Chanan Lo Tishav El Besof, and Rav Yochanan ben Zakkai on this issue sides with Chanan, and that you only have to make a shvuah at the end and not at the beginning. So a highly contested issue, a machlokas between Chanan and the Kohanim Gedolim, a machlokas between Rabbi Dosa and Rav Yochanan ben Zakkai. Okay, a question of how many shvuahs does she need to make, one or two? One only at the end, or two, one at the beginning and one at the end. Or Reminu. The Gemara is going to pick up a couple of very technical issues, and that's the following one on the very top of Kuf Hei Amud Aleph, starting with the Gemara. Shosha Dayanak Zeles Hayu Bishalayim Admon Ben Gadai V'Chanan Amitz V'Chanan Ben Avi Shalom. So there are three judges, and they judge issues of Gzelos in Yerushalayim, and the three judges are Admon, Chanan, and Chanan. Chanan Amitzri and Chanan ben Avi Shalom. Okay, so there are really two questions, and the Gemara articulates both questions. Kasha Tlasa Train. So first of all, the numbers do not correspond. In our Mishnah, we learned that there were two judges, and meanwhile, this Braisa describes three. And number two, Kasha Gzeros Agzelos. In the Mishnah, we said that they were judges of Gzeros, and meanwhile, in the Braisa, they mentioned they were judges of Gzelos. So now, it could be, you know, sometimes when you have too many questions, the questions end up answering each other. Meaning, can it be, right, can it be that there were two different courts that were presiding? So, first of all, when you have a match of two out of the three judges, that's highly unlikely. Secondly, Tosus points out that if you have multiple jobs, you would like to distribute the jobs between many people. And don't give too many jobs to one person. So, the Gemara does not take that course of action, but rather the Gemara takes answers in the following manner. Bishlam atlasa chen lo kashav dechashav lo ketanim v'delo chashav lei lo ketanim. So the Gemara's first answer is that our Mishnah only describes the chashav, only the important ones, and the Mishnah doesn't describe the unimportant ones. Now I know that's sharp, and it's harsh to describe one of these judges as being unimportant and therefore not to be counted. And by the way, Tosos points out, again, second Tosos, I'm just highlighting it. Tosos points out, we do find often the time where the most important is reserved at the end. And I know if you just go back a short 45 days ago, to Pesach, remember how we talked about those in Bnei Brak? So who was mentioned at the end of that list? The last one who was Masubim ben Bnei Brak. So the last one in that list was Rabbi Akiva. He was the last one in the list. Rabbi Akiva, in terms of Chashivos, right, should have been in the beginning of the list. So Tosus points out, this is not a standard where somebody who is Eino Chashiv is omitted. But okay. But our Mishnah is only discussing the Chashivim, so that's two of the three, and the Braisa goes through all three. And
talks about the two who did the wrong.
Right.
The third one, maybe.
Right. It's another very good point. Okay. So, Alexeros Agzelos Kasha. But however, what were they presiding over? The Mishnah describes that they were presiding over decrees. The Braisa describes that they were presiding over Gezel. So, Amir Avdach, Mayitzak Shayu Gozrin Gezeros Al Gezelos. Okay. They're complementary to one another. Yet, decrees. You know what kind of decrees? Decrees over theft. Now, that's a strange expression. Decrees over theft. Meaning, generally speaking, how does judgment over theft go? It's pretty simple. You stole, pay him back. Right. And sometimes you factor it by two, and sometimes you factor it by four or five. But generally speaking, what does that mean? What are we decreeing on theft? So the Gemara goes on to explain. Kedetanya. Kitman Natiya. Rashi describes this. Now, not everyone agrees to Rashi, but again, we traditionally go through Rashi's explanation of the Gemara. So the Kitma Natiya, Rashi says, that you'll find the very same Gemara, Baba Kama. Gabe Behemish Nichnas de Rashus on Isaac. So let's say one of your animals goes into the property of the damaged party. Vizika Kitma Natiya. Ilan Kamashaminosa. And what does he do? He uproots a sapling. Okay. Plucks out a sapling. We are, generally speaking, very protective of trees in Israel. I know I sound like I'm plugging the JNF right now, but it's true. And especially a sapling, a young tree. So we're very protective of the trees in Eretz Yisrael. So Rabbi Yossi Omer goes to Gezer Shib Yerushalayim Omrim. So this is what the judges in Yerushalayim would do. Nitiya Bashnasa Shtei Kesef, Bat Shtei Shanim Arba Kesef. Actual penalties levied against any damage that's done against trees in Eretz Yisrael. Okay? In other words, because of our... I should pass this on to the JNF. I don't know if they know about this Gemara. But the trees are so important that not only if you damage, you have to make general compensation, which is always true whenever you damage, but moreover, you are actually penalized for damaging trees in Eretz Yisrael. So now you understand the Gozrin al Gezelos. Sometimes it's not just a simple reimbursement of that which you damaged. Sometimes there's going to be a fine as well. Or in the Gemara now challenges based on another Braisa, Shlosha Dayan Gzeros, or Yubish Admon v'chanan v'nachum. So the Gemara says, here in this braisa, what do we have? Three judges, but of the three, Admon Chanan, good, that's exactly what we expected, and then Nachum. Who's Nachum? That wasn't described in the previous brisa. Amar Papa Mantana Nachum Rabbi Nasan He. So the Gemara says, okay, that's a different brisa that gives us this version. The Tanya will learn to the brisa. Rabbi Nasan Amar Af Nachum Amandai Migos Vigzer Shibishlam Haya V'Lahod Lo Chachamim. Okay, we have a debate. Who was that third judge of these three judges? According to Rabbi Nasan, it was Nachum Hamadai. Okay, Vesu Leka, the Gemara says, really, these are the only judges in Yerushalayim. V'amra Pinchas Amra Rabbi Yosha Shalosh Meos V'tishim V'arba Bate Dinim Hayib Yerushalayim. There were 394 courts in Yerushalayim. Kenegdim Bate Knesios, corresponding to that the number of shuls. Kenegdim Bate Medrashos, corresponding to that the number of base medrash, and corresponding to that Kenegdim Bate Sofin, the number of schools in Yerushalayim. So Dayanim Tu V'Havos. So the Gemara says, okay, of course you're right. There were many judges in Yerushalayim. B'chi Kamina goes exer. We're just highlighting one specific subfield within the judges. Meaning, we're just talking about the judges who judged over decrees of theft and damage. So they would get paid, and we're now going to be talking about for the rest of the daf today payment that goes to the judges for judging. So there are really two issues that need to be discussed. Number one, where's the source of revenue coming from? And number two, wait a second, they're going to get paid. What about within the second discussion? What about number one, judging cases is a mitzvah in the Torah, and generally speaking, you don't get paid for doing mitzvos. And number two, shochad. What about the issue of bribery? So Tisha v'tisha mana mitchumas halishka. They would get paid 99 mana. Excuse me. Thank you. 99 mana from the lishka, from the chumas halishka. Okay, so remember back in Shkalim, basically a tax was levied on every Jew in amongst the Jewish people, and collected into the Beis Hamikdash. Some of that money will go to Karban, and some of that money will go to communal needs. And this is part of communal needs. So basically, they were paid from public money. Good. So lo ratzu mosif lehem. Now, what if there's a work stoppage? What if they? Now, I'm going to express this in a kind of tongue in cheek fashion. But what if they start? Picketing. So lo ratzu says, really, we're talking about judges right now. The judges are not rishayim. They're not going to work stoppage. Well, what are you talking about? Ela lo safku. No. In other words, no. In other words, what if it's not cost of living? It just doesn't. It doesn't meet their needs. Alpha pishlo ratzu mosifin alehim. Even though they're going to say, no, it's okay, we'll make do. No. In other words, he compensate them based on cost of living. Okay. That addressed issue number one. In other words, where does their source of revenue come from? So it comes from public money. Okay. Karna avashakal istiri mizakai v'istiri mechayev. Karna, when he would preside over a case, so he would get paid. However, Karna was not in a position where he collected public money. The judges in Yerushalayim, based on a system of judgment, so they got paid by public money. But Karna was in a community where there was simply no public money to pay him. So how would he get paid for judging? So he would take a coin from both litigants, v'dain lehudina, and that's how we judge. To which the Gemara says, slow down. Wait 1 second. We know you can't take money from the litigants in order to judge. Aren't you now subject to bribery? Well, maybe if you only get paid by one party, that's shochad, because now you're going to be inclined in the direction of where the money came from. But over here, he got paid by both. So doesn't that kind of balance the scale? So the Gemara says, but still it's problematic, even if he got paid by both litigants. How do you understand the pasuk of shocha lo sikach? Im lalame shol lezakos zechay v'shol lechay v'sazakai. Well, if it's coming to tell me that it's the whole purpose of not accepting money is not to favor one over the other, harik far nemar lo sata mishpat. The Torah already says that you're not allowed to incline judgment. So even if it was balanced payment from both litigants, still there is a prohibition in the Torah not to incline judgment. So what is the Torah coming to include or add to this point of lo sikach shochad? So even if you're judging correctly, meaning here's the case, here are the issues, judge heard it, judge knows the halacha, and even if he's going to judge correctly, you still can't get paid. So once again, now the question's back on Karna. So the Gemara's answer goes like this: Hani milehecha deshakol b'torah shochad. Karna b'torah agra havashakol. Look, if you look at turn to the litigant and you say to each litigant, "Look, your payment's going to help your case," and you go to the other litigant and you say to him on another side room, "Your payment's going to help your case," that's when shochad becomes a prohibition. However, if you say to them, "Look, right, I'm qualified, I'm a judge, I know the halacha, but you know, man's got to eat. So you pay me because, in other words, you need a court, you need to hire the court. Okay, so you pay me because this is schar." Under those circumstances, then it's not shochad. The Gemara says, if a Torah sagra mishari, still the Gemara says it's not right. V'atanan, we learned in the Mishnah. Hanotos chala dun dinim b'telim. Anyone who collects money to serve as a judge, so the judgment is rendered in an invalid judgment. So hani milagar dina, karna agar b'tela havashakal. So the Gemara says, look, if you're getting paid to judge, so that's unacceptable, and the judgment becomes an invalid judgment. However, if you're getting paid because it's taking you away from your other profession, that you can get paid for. So in other words, loss of work, that's something that you're entitled to get paid for. V'agra b'tela mishari, the Gemara still pushes this, and the Gemara says, is that acceptable? V'atanya, mechura dayanim shenotos chal adon, so ela shedin adin. So the Gemara says, it's mechura davar. Look, even though technically speaking, it's a good judgment, but still, it's unpleasant. It's disgusting. So the Gemara says, "Heichidam ilam agar dina din va'atanya notos char ledin dina b'telim." Now, why was he collecting money? If he was collecting money to judge, so we said just a moment ago that the judgment is rendered invalid. So ela agar b'telim. So it must be that he's collecting money because it's taking him away from his other profession, and still va'katani mechur hadayan, and it's still being described as disgusting. So hani mila b'tela delamucha karna b'tela demucha hava shakel. So the Gemara says, look, if you're really doing nothing, and then you come into court with the excuse of, look, you'll pay me because you're taking me away from, well, I wasn't really doing anything, but you're taking me away from it, so the Gemara says, that's mechura davar. However, if you have a skill, and you have some other form of employment, and it's clear to everyone, it's evident, that this is taking you away from it, the Gemara says, that's perfectly legitimate. What was Karna's profession? He was an official wine smeller / taster. Okay, he was skilled in wine tasting, wine smelling, and he actually got paid for it, and that was his other profession. Ravuna, whenever he had a case come in front of him, Amalu Avli Gavra, the Dalile Bicharike, the Idan Lachudina. So he says, now he, what did he do for a living? He irrigated fields for a living. I love it. In other words, simple professions, not complicated professions. So he irrigated fields for a living. And so therefore, for him to go to court would actually take him away from doing his work. He'd have to subcontract in order to go to court. So again, it was self-evident that going to court took him away from his day job. And so therefore, under those circumstances, totally within his right to get paid. Okay. Stop. What you're saying is reasonable. I happen not to know, but sounds reasonable. Okay, we'll stop over here. Tomorrow we'll start with the words Amar Rabbi Abohu. More on Shochad. The rest of today's daf is dedicated to the topic of Shochad. Very interesting Gemara is coming up.